Could be aliens from, you know, from the planet Zoc, as far as they're concerned. So no, it is not the same as biblical creation, but intelligent design is almost, to the evolutionists in the public school system, almost as big a threat, because they equate the two. And the moment they allow intelligent design, or in their minds, imagine allowing intelligent design into the classroom, that's almost tantamount to saying, okay, we're allowing creation in, because who or what is the intelligent designer? And the kids will all automatically realize, okay, it must be the God of the Bible and so forth. So anyway, okay, so what we want to do now is switch gears and look at the opposite side of that coin. So we've seen that evolution is a science theory, and as such, it is subject to the rules of the scientific model. You have to, if you're going to say something is science, it must follow those rules. Now let's look at biblical creation. God does not provide us with a means of proving that he created, other than even when Jesus was being, you know, that when the bad guys were coming after him, he said, look, you know, for which ones of these works are you stoning me? He says, I'm not. We're not stoning you, but you, who would be a mere man, claim to be God. And he says, look, at least believe the miracles. Why would he say that? Because those miracles were prophesied that would only come true in the Messiah. And they were coming true in him. I am the Messiah, you know. And so the whole idea of creation, it's not a science theory. You cannot prove it scientifically, but the evidence is overwhelming. So I use Romans 1:20 as our ministry verse, and as the verse that I use to introduce this particular program. That verse basically says, since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, which are his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly seen. How? Being understood by that which has been made. That's the creation around us. But then the verse ends with that scary part. It says, so that they are without excuse. Who's the they? People. People are without excuse. We will, whether you want to believe it or not, we will all stand before God one day. And we will not be able to say, oh, I never knew there was a God. He's going to say, I made it plain to you through everything around you, that it was impossible that it could just come about by random chance, yet you chose not to believe. So if it's that clear, what we want to do is just delve into this realm a little bit. This is why we do a wildlife safari to South Africa based on this program, because you can't go anywhere else in this world to see such a huge array of creatures that God made at one time, and from the back of a Land Rover, an open Land Rover as well. So it's very incredible. So what we want to do is just look at some things around the world. I'm going to show you some things out of the box, then we'll take a tour. That screen is on, yes. So we'll take a quick world tour and have a look at some of these things. I want to show you a few critters. Now, you'll have to excuse my South African bias here. But anyway, I want to show you one of my favorite creatures, and it's this one. One of my favorite creatures is a chameleon. Now, a chameleon is an astonishing creature for a number of reasons. The most obvious one, and that you know about, is that it can change color. And it changes color almost miraculously. You can have a chameleon in a dry tree with brown leaves, because it's dead. The chameleon right in front of your eyes will be all brown to match those leaves. If you pick up the chameleon and move him over here into a bright green tree with yellow flowers, right in front of your eyes, he'll turn yellow, he'll turn green with yellow spots to match the flowers. And the thinking end of the chameleon, he doesn't even know that it's happening. Now, chameleons change color not just for camouflage, because that's automatic, but they can influence their own color as well. Like when a male sees another male, he can change his color as a communication to that male. Or if it's a female, he can completely change the color to communicate to the female. It's amazing how they can do that. But because they can change colors, the Zulu people that I grew up with would panic every time they would see a chameleon, and they would try to kill it. And I would say to them, why are you killing the chameleon? Why are you killing it? And they said, because we're really afraid of it. I said, why are you so afraid of it? It says, because it has an evil spirit living inside of it. I said, why do you think that it has an evil spirit living inside it? It said, how else can you explain? It's changing color by magic. I said, it's not magic. It's designed to do that. Like this little piece of metal, if I put it in this part of a car and turn it, by magic, the engine starts. Well, it must be an evil spirit living in the car. Oh, no, the key is designed to start the engine. I said, bingo, the same thing with this guy. Look at the chameleon. He is the slowest creature in the reptile world. He's like the sloth of the reptile world. Look at all of the other reptiles that live here in Zululand. Look how quick they are, the ones that live on the trees or the ones that can jump into the water. Look how quick they are. The chameleon is so slow. So much so that when you find a real one, and twice we've actually found one at night coming back on our game drives, and we'll stop the Land Rover because the Land Rovers have side lights to shine into the bush, and sometimes it'll catch one. And you can go and you can just take the chameleon, a wild chameleon, and it'll just walk on you as though it's tame. They do not know fear because their only defense is to sit quiet and blend in. And of course, you know about their Google eyes. One eye can look down, the other eye can be looking up. So when they're sitting there quietly, if a fly lands over here, one eye will see it, and the chameleon will turn its head slowly, and then it will determine, when both eyes are looking at it, it will determine that with that 3D look now, if the fly is close enough so his big tongue can zap out and get him. Now the point is, I never had a chameleon this big. They do get that big, but if his tongue was... If the chameleon was this big, his tongue would be way out to here. It's incredible how they work. But chameleons are absolutely astonishing for another reason. If you've ever watched the Olympic Games, the Summer Olympic Games, you ever see those guys on the rings? They do something, I think, called an iron cross or something. I don't know what it's called. But they have to be straight out like this, support their weight straight out like this. Now, a human being, I think they have to hold that for 3 seconds. A human being, it's almost impossible to do that. They have to train for years to get the strength to hold themselves up like that. You should watch a chameleon. If you have one on your hand like this, and you hold your other hand out, and it wants to reach out, it will hold onto your finger here with its back legs and stretch its body straight out. And if you pull your hand back, its body can be absolutely straight out and just sitting there looking around. That's like doing an iron cross, like with one hand, you know. It's incredible. And he's got little thin, scrawny back legs. How does he do it? And he's got this prehensile tail. They are phenomenal creatures. Now, that's just one creature. Let me show you something else. We never had these in South Africa, but I'm still fascinated with the whole genre of meat-eating plants. Okay, so you know what a Venus flytrap is. But there's also a sundew with nice sticky little things on. As soon as a mosquito or a fly lands on it, it can't get off. Or the little pitcher plants or a bladderwort with this beautiful sweet water at the bottom. And as soon as the creature goes down to get the water, there's no getting out and the creature just gets absorbed. Well, it's the same thing with this guy. These plants don't smell very good. they're not designed to. They stink. But that's because normally when you see a fly, where do you see them? They're out in the, you know, they're in your garbage or things that your dog did in the yard that you haven't cleaned up yet. Okay, so along comes a fly, gets a whiff of the stinky plant. What does it normally do? It flies down to try to find the food, and next thing you know, zap, and the thing closes around it. Now, by the way, a fly or anything in there, it has to hit the trigger several times, because if it happens only once, it'll miss almost every time. It has to hit the trigger several times for it to work. When it works, it closes on the fly or whatever has gone in there, and now it's doomed. There's these neat little bars here. You might say jail bars here. If these jail bars weren't here, well, the fly could just walk out and fly away. But he can't, because these perfect little jail bars here. I don't like to spiritualize things, but every time I saw that in nature, I thought, wow, that fly is not getting out of that plant. It is doomed. And when I read the scriptures, I realize, wow, there's no way that I can escape the penalty of my sin. I cannot climb out of the plant. I cannot climb out of my sin. I cannot do anything. But Jesus Christ died on that cross to pay the penalty of my sins, and so my... It's the same thing. It'd be like me releasing this fly. Fly can't do it on his own. I have to release him if I'm going to. It's the same thing with my life. I can't save myself. Took Jesus Christ on the cross to do it. But in any event, that's one plant. Let me show you an amphibian. How about this weird frog from the country of Australia? This frog does a weird thing. It eats its babies. Now, on the face of that, you go, okay, it eats its babies. Well, then how is it going to keep itself, its kind alive? Well, not if it eats its babies, it's not going to, but what is it doing eating its babies? Well, here's the deal. This frog has very powerful stomach acids. Anything it eats, a fly or a grasshopper, moth, whatever, goes down there. The acids are so strong, it immediately breaks that creature apart and digests it. But when a baby frog is swallowed, when this creature's bait, its young, are swallowed, in the skin of the baby frog is a special chemical that communicates with the lining of the mother's stomach and stops the production of that acid. So the babies can all get swallowed and live in the mother's stomach. She's not eating them, she's incubating them. While they're in there, she can't eat, of course. But when they're fully mature, she opens up her mouth and all the little baby frogs come out and now they can start their own lives. Now her stomach begins to produce acid again. Ask a question. What kind of random chance would produce a chemical in the skin of the babies to stop the acid production in the mother's stomach? How did that happen? And if the system did not work perfectly as a whole the first time, nothing works at all. And that's another kind of, you might even say, a law of science. The whole thing has to work at the beginning or nothing works at all. So the whole thing, how could that ever come about by chance? Well, that's just one amphibian. Let me just show you one mammal. One of the most popular animals that people like to look at in South Africa are giraffes because of the height of them. And they're big, graceful animals. When they run, it just seems like they're barely moving, and yet they're moving at a real good clip. They're just very beautiful and very graceful animals. But what's weird is when they have to drink, they've got to go through this weird scenario. Any other animal, you know, like lions or dogs or cows or anything like that, their mouths are already close to the water. An elephant's got his own built-in straw. So what does a giraffe do? Well, a giraffe, when he's thirsty, he's got to go through this whole rigmarole of making sure there's no predators around. When he's finally satisfied, he walks up to the water. His head is like 18 feet in the air. He's got to spread his front legs out like this. That lowers his body somewhat, but not enough. Then he has to bend the legs, and then the front of the body is low enough that it can bring that long neck down to the water to drink. But then a sad thing happens to a giraffe. When the neck is down, all the blood in that big, thick, long neck, all that blood flows down because gravity is pulling it down now. While the giraffe is drinking, the pressure in his head gets greater and greater and greater, and eventually his head just pops, and that's why there's no more giraffes in the world. Their heads have all popped. It was a design flaw. Now you're all looking at me like I'm... Okay. Well, let me stop there a moment. Let me reverse. That, of course, doesn't happen. We saw lots of giraffes. But it would if there wasn't something else amazing. So let me reverse and tell you the real story. The giraffe really does have to get into that weird position. When his head goes down to the water, the blood really does want to go down to its head because of gravity pulling it there. But it can't in a giraffe. It can't. Why? When a giraffe's neck is up, it's got a big, powerful heart. And there are sensors to tell the cardiovascular system where the head is. When the head is up, the sensors know that, and all the valves in the giraffe's neck are open. So the heart can pump blood the whole way up to the head and back down. When the head goes down, the sensors sense that and shut the valves off in the giraffe's neck so that the blood does not go down to its head. And the little bit that does get there, there's a special pad at the base of his brain that soaks up that blood, whatever blood does get there. So if the giraffe puts his head up, like if lions do suddenly attack him, his head goes up, there's no blood to drain out, and he's never dizzy. And so there's no pressure on his brain. Now, where did the giraffe get exactly the system built in with sensors and everything and with valves to operate with the sensors to know when the head is up and when the head is down? Now, folks, you can look at anything. I've only just talked about a giraffe, a chameleon, which is a reptile, an amphibian, a frog, and a plant. I suppose I could choose one bird and one insect, but you get the idea. Here's the point I want to make about this. You can look at any creature you want. I don't care if it's a big grand creature like a giraffe or an elephant, or if it's a little tiny creature like a gnat or a mosquito. Every single creature on the planet, if you analyze it, if you study how it works, if you study its instincts, study how it functions, you would be astounded how they work. Every single creature on the planet has its own amazing stories to tell. I just told you some stories, some more obvious creatures, you know, but every creature has its own amazing stories to tell. That's kind of lesson number one tonight. Every creature has its own amazing story to tell. Here's another thing I want to talk about tonight. Now, spring is we're just kind of started with winter, but in another month or so, I know in Pennsylvania, we'll start to see robins here coming up the end of January, maybe in February. And of course, that's the first sign of spring. So when we see spring coming, the birds come back and, you know, the flowers begin to pop out. The birds begin to build something. What are they building? They're building nests. Now, let's just think about the robins for a moment. We just take this for granted, but I think Romans 1:20 would have us hit the brake and say, no, stop and look and consider. How does that robin who's building a nest out in your front yard, how does she know how to build a nest? Did she go to Robin School of Nest Building? No, she knows it automatically. She knows automatically that she's supposed to build a nest now that she's pregnant. She's got eggs in her. She knows she's supposed to build a nest. How does she know where to build it? How does she know what to build it with? How does she know how big to make it? How does she know what shape to make it? Did she go to Robin School of Nest Building? No. You and I know the word. It's called instinct. She knows it by instinct. What is instinct? Instinct, very basically, very simply, is like a free education that God has given to all creatures so that they can function in their environment. And it's not more than what they need. It's not less. Let me show you something amazing with a little bird from South Africa. This is a masked weaver bird that makes this little unique nest. This nest hangs near the water, and it hangs from here. You can see this little pipe right here. The female will go up inside this little hole, and this pocket here holds the eggs. So the female will go up inside this little wall here. She goes up inside and comes down inside the pocket, and she lays her eggs, and she can sit there. And the winds can blow, and the nest is quite secure there hanging from the tree. But the male builds the nest. When he's done, he calls to his mate and says, "Oh, dear, come see the nest I made, you know." She will come and look it over, and invariably she will reject it, and often she'll rip it apart. Now you look at that and go, what? Why? So you would think that the male would be kind of hurt, you know. Well, sorry, I thought you liked that, you know. And so wouldn't you think, I mean, guys, okay, this is, you know, if I did something for my wife and I knew she didn't like it, why would I go right back and do the same thing again? Okay, no, that's what the male does. He goes right back to the same tree, usually to the same branch, builds exactly the same nest. When he's finally done with it, he calls his mate. She comes over, looks it over. Nope, don't want that one either. She might even rip that one apart. You would think the male would say, well, she doesn't like that nest. I'll go check how the crow builds his nest, or maybe a stork or whatever. He'll come back and he'll say, okay, yeah, the crow, he just makes a few branches and that's it. No. He doesn't bother to go look at what the other birds do. He couldn't learn it anyway, because this is an instinct that he has. This is the only nest he is pre-programmed to make. And every species of weaver bird makes a different, beautifully woven nest. And so he'll make 4, 5, 6, 7 before she's finally happy. Nobody knows why this happens. One person has theorized, and they might be right, since these nests are just hanging out in the open, it might confuse predators as to where the real eggs are. Maybe if there's a lot of decoys hanging there, maybe the snakes won't know where their eggs are. That could be, very well be, but it's programmed into the birds. So you'll see a tree full of these nests. Most of them are not occupied. So this is not more than what the creature needs, it's not less. It's exactly what the creature needs. Now, when you think of instinct, every creature has its own instinct. When the Zulu people used to bring me orphaned animals, I never found out whatever happened to the parents, why I was getting some orphaned animals, but they would come to our door and knock on the door, and most of the people I didn't even know, but they'd have a box or a bag or whatever, and they'd give it to my mom or give it to me, and then they'd thank me and then leave. And I never knew what was in there. So I'd look in, and depending on the number of legs or the number of eyes or the absence of legs or whatever, you know, I never knew what I was going to see. And sometimes I'd look in and see little eyes looking up at me. Some of the creatures, I had no idea what they were or what to do. I didn't know what to do with a rail. Do you even know what a rail is? I didn't. It was like it's like a lily trotter, big feet. I had no idea what to do with a with a lily trotter, you know. And I had a Galago. They gave me a Galago. You probably don't even know what that is. I didn't. I knew what they were, but I'd never seen one in the daytime because they're nocturnal. They're like halfway between a monkey and a cat with huge eyes. So if your flashlight catches one at night, you think the swamp monsters come out after you because they have these big eyes. Anyway. I wouldn't know what to do to keep some of these animals alive. I had a whole flock of guinea fowl living under my bed. And they were all babies. Guess what guinea fowl do at 4 o'clock in the morning? They get up and they think that I'm their mother and they start yelling for food, you know. And so I would say to the local rangers, I'd say, what do you do to feed this? What do you do to take care of that? And they often wouldn't know themselves. And many creatures I had would die. And I would cry. Because I would do everything I could to keep them alive, but I wouldn't know how often to feed them. I wouldn't know how much they needed. But see, God has given to the real parents of these creatures, He's given them the exact knowledge. When that robin builds her nest, when she knows that the eggs have to go in the nest, she knows that she's supposed to sit on the eggs, but she knows exactly how long to sit on them. And then when she gets off, when they hatch, she knows that she's supposed to feed them. But how does she know how much to feed them? And so forth, and just on and on. And many of the creatures, I just lost and I'd have to bury them. I'd say, sorry, little buddy, I didn't know what to do to keep you alive. And here I think I'm a little bit more intelligent than these animals, but instinct is a phenomenal thing. It is not more than what the creature needs, it's not less. But through instinct, the creature knows exactly what to do to find a mate, exactly what to do to rear their young, exactly what to do when danger approaches, exactly what to do when the seasons change, and where to go. They know exactly what to do. So what is instinct? It's like a free education that God has given to all creatures. If you ask an evolutionist, how did a creature get its instinct? Their answer will always start with, you ready? Their answers will always, by necessity, start with, millions of years ago, stop right there. The moment you say millions of years ago, you're taking it outside the realm of observable, measurable science, and you're just going to concoct a story. But the story is going to go something like this. Millions of years ago, the robin learned that that was a practical nest. Okay, so she learns it's a practical nest. Tell me how it's passed on down. They have no idea. The Bible simply says that God made everything and it was good. That means it's complete. It won't need anything else from now till the end of time. From now on, the creature will know exactly what to do. Generation after generation after generation, it will have this instinctive knowledge built into it, which evolution can't begin to explain. But it's all pre-wired in this marvelous thing called created life. It's astonishing. Well, that's the second lesson we want to consider. The first one was every creature has amazing things that it can do. Secondly, every creature has its own instinct that allows it to thrive in its environment. And lastly, before we take our little quick safari around the world, lastly, why is every creature the size that it is compared with everything else in nature if it's all just a random chance? What do I mean by that? Well, imagine if the tallest tree in the world was only a foot tall. Imagine what you wouldn't have. You would not have wood to build a structure like this. You would not have shade in the summertime. You would not have, you know, imagine fruit trees. Imagine if trees were only this tall, you'd have to eat 10,000 apples a day to keep the doctor away and whatever. I mean, we wouldn't even be alive because tree leaves give us oxygen. Think about it. We don't even think about the size of trees, but just the size of it. It keeps everything alive. What about ants? What if in the summertime in your yard, you'd see these big, huge mounds in the morning and there were ants in your yard in those mounds the same size as you? How would you like to function with man-eating ants in your yard the same size as you are? If ants were the size of you, you'd never be able to outrun them. And if they caught you, you'd never overpower an ant. God has given them super strength and super speed for their size because he's given them a very special job to do. Around the world, almost everywhere in around the world where you find living things, you find ants. They're like God's perfect little garbage collectors. They keep the earth clean and sanitized. If ants didn't work the way they do and function the way they do, the whole ecosystem wouldn't work. Twice we've had the privilege of seeing raiding parties of Matabele ants on our wildlife safaris. And typically what we'll do is we'll get out of the Land Rover and walk up to watch them. These are raiding parties of several hundred. They'll be maybe up to about 8 inches wide, and maybe the whole column will be 10 feet long. This is a raiding party of big red Matabele ants. You do not want to get bitten by these things. So they'll raid. It looks like a big snake walking, but it's all these ants following a column. So we'll get out and we'll follow them. You can actually follow right next to them with your camera, with your phone or whatever. It's cool to do. What are they doing? They're going to raid the termite mounds. And when they find the termite mounds, they make a clicking, like a hissing sound. I don't know if it's something they do with their legs. But if you listen, if everything's quiet, you can hear like this hissing sound. So they'll find these termite mounds, and the ants will swarm around there, and they'll go into the holes. They'll come back out with a termite or two. When they've all done their raiding, now the column goes back the other way, they're each carrying a termite or two, pretty much the size of them. That's like you and me picking up two or three people the same size as us and running at 50 miles an hour with them. You and I have not been given that kind of strength and speed relative to our body, but the ant has. It's astonishing how it is. So you think of the size of things. Why aren't ants as big as us? Or how about this? Here is a sound. You're not going to hear it so much now, this time of year, but in a couple months or in the fall, whatever, you hear this sound at night. Here's the sound. What is it? I can't make it as high as that actually is supposed to be. Mosquito, right? Here's a worse sound. Now, when she stops playing her little violin, what does that mean? That means she's landed on you. Do you want her doing that? Because I know what you're going to do. You're lying there, you hear, No, that's when I hear that, I got to get up and I go get the fly swatter and I got to, you know, I have to wake up, you know, turn the light on, go find that dumb mosquito and kill it. Somebody said something funny one time. It's very true. They said, if you think you are so insignificant in your life, it's something like this. If you think that you're so insignificant, or a person who thinks that they're insignificant has never spent a night alone under the sheets with a mosquito, something like that. Okay, you know, so anyway, what about this? What if the mosquito was this size? Now imagine if the mosquito, why aren't mosquitoes this size? Some of the parrots we have at home are that size. Why not a mosquito? And by the way, imagine if they were this big. Imagine the mosquito sitting on your wall like they do. And you say goodnight to your family and, you know, you turn off the light. She sees you. She's hungry. She's a big mosquito. She's not going to come, No. She's got big propellers. She's going to come, she's going to land on you and stick that thing in you and suck all the Pepsi out of you. You want her doing that? You have to ask yourself a question. Why isn't the mosquito this big? I think it's because God said so big and no bigger, because as it is, you're the most deadly animal in the world because of all the diseases you carry. Well, how about this one? How many of you have ever been stung by a bee? Okay, most of us have been stung by bees at one time or other, right? When you got stung, you probably got stung as a kid. And when you were a kid, you probably thought the bee was this big, right? Because that's what kids think. All right, so if you got stung by a bee that was this big, you'd be dead. Why? Because this bee is about 200 times the size of a real bee. Beekeepers will tell us you can get about 400 bee stings before the venom would be too much for your body to be able to handle, and then you would succumb, unless you're allergic, of course. But under normal circumstances, an adult can get about 400 bee stings before it's fatal. Most of us have been stung at some time when we were a kid, so we're like half the size of us an adult. If bees were this big, you'd be dead, because then it put more venom in you than you can handle. But when you think about bees, they're not that big. And when you got a sting, you probably got one bee sting, or maybe two. in Africa, you had to be very careful around bees because I grew up with the African killer bees. They're no more dangerous per bee than bees over here, but they get very aggressive as a whole group of them. They communicate by pheromones very quickly. So you had to be careful. If you make one angry, the rest of them will come very quickly. So we knew not to mess with the African killer bees. And so sometimes they would make their hives in the attic above our house. We just had houses with roofs, you know, sort of like this, but with a flat Masonite roof. Well, sometimes they'd get in somehow and they'd make their hives in the roof of our living room, and the honey would run down our living room walls. Well, you can't have that because that's pulling in other bugs into your house and going for the honey and wasps and all that kind of stuff. So we had to get rid of the bees somehow. Well, in our woodshed, which is the only place we had to keep our wood dry, it's the only way we had for my mom to cook years ago and the only way we could keep our house warm, a big, huge metal stove in the kitchen. So we had to keep the wood dry. We had a little woodshed, and in that shed was a huge black box, probably about three times the size of this box. And we used to keep kindling in there. The box was empty, and the bees found it. So my mom and dad thought, well, let's let the bees in there. Maybe one day we can get honey out of it. So every time we would go into the shed, we had to be very, very careful and quiet. We'd walk in and it would sound like a big electric motor running inside that box. We'd walk in real carefully and like, hi guys. And we'd like get the wood real carefully. I'm being good. Bye-bye. See you guys later, you know. And you'd see the bees coming out of the whole end of the box. There's bees coming and going all the time. They never bothered us with that. But one day, my dad was mowing our yard back and forth with the station. Our mission station had a little tractor mower, and he was mowing our portion of the yard. Bees didn't mind that. But suddenly, a helicopter flew over. Now, we were a rural hospital mission station in the middle of nowhere. We never had helicopters in our area. Somehow, there was a helicopter. Here came a helicopter. The bees did not like that at all. So here's my dad. He's mowing. Helicopter flies over. Next thing he knows, he is covered with bees stinging him. So he jumped off the tractor. It kept going. It eventually ran into a tree 2 miles away. Anyway, ran into a tree and stopped. He went running down to the house. The bees followed him to the house. He jumped inside the house. He was stung everywhere. He jumped inside the house, and the bees couldn't follow him. And he didn't have, you know, that many stings, so he swelled all up and got all red. But still, he didn't die from that. But the bees kept going. They were mad. A helicopter flew over. So they killed everything that they could within 200 feet. They found my brother's rabbits and they killed the rabbits. They killed anything that moved because the helicopter flew over. So you didn't mess with the African killer bees unless your name was Mike Snavely, because I was always too curious. So one day something happened I was not prepared for. I was playing alone in the yard, and the house, this is a boarding establishment because my parents lived in a rural mission station, so the only way we could get a schooling is to go to a government public school, and it was a boarding house that our mission had for us. We only got to see our parents maybe a total of 3 months out of every year. So I was at this boarding establishment, and I was alone playing in the yard. I suddenly heard this sound I'd never heard before, and I looked over at the house, and I saw the sky above it turning all brown. And I realized it was bees coming over the house, and they were coming toward me. I knew there was no way I'd make it to the house before they got to me, and I didn't know if they were already mad. And I thought, what do I do? What do I do? So I thought that I did the only thing I could think to do. I dropped on the ground and made myself as still and as small as I could. And I just lay there as still as I could. Here came the bees. But then suddenly they all turned and went into a hedge about as far as that wall is. They turned and flew into the hedge, and I'm lying there thinking, what are they doing? What are they doing? And they all landed. There must have been a queen among them, and she's landed in the hedge, and all these bees are building on top of her, making this giant ball of bees in the hedge. I had never seen anything like that before. Once they landed, I did one of these things. I crept up, whoa, and looked and saw this huge ball of bees. So I couldn't let well enough alone, you see. So I went and got a big, long stick. And the stick had a fork at the end of it. So I crept back over, and I put the fork right below this big ball of bees, and I looked over at where I was going to try to make my escape to, back to the house. I got ready. I went, whew, and I looked back at it, and I thought, ready? And I shook it. To this day, I can still hear what sounded like a 1,000 lawnmower engines starting. I can still picture as I dropped that stick and ran with that gleeful horror. Ah! I could hear the bees behind me. Right as I dropped that stick, I can still picture clumps of bees like falling off and then vaporizing into attack vessels as they came right at me. I dropped that stick and ran for my life to the door. Got to the door, slammed the door. I made it. Yes, yes, yes. I walk up to the window. I'm looking at all the bees outside. And, you know. Little boys don't always think. I didn't think that maybe there was somebody else outside. Fortunately, there wasn't. So anyway, I stood at the window, and I stood at the window, and I thought, man, look at all these bees, and they can see me. They can see, but they don't know what glass is. So they're going, bing, 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 bing. They're popping off the glass, and I thought to myself later on, boy, that was dumb. What if I, in my sprinting to get to the house, what if I had tripped, you know, sprained my ankle or put my foot in a hole and broke my ankle or something and fell down? I would have been the sole object of the wrath of all those bees. And I probably wouldn't have survived that day. So anyway, bees, they're not that size relative to our body size. How about this guy? We see these guys in the fall, and they are astonishing. Now, they're not yellow jackets. They're not this big, of course, but imagine if they were. They have an amazing ability to smell sugar. So we were camping at the shore one time. We've had pancakes. I put the pancakes down, put syrup on them. Here came the yellow jackets. So I thought, okay, guys, I don't want to accidentally eat one of you. So I moved my pancake toward me, moved all the yellow jackets with my fork. I moved them to the one side of the plate. You guys go eat over there. As they came, I go, no, you guys go eat over there. So I moved the yellow jackets there, and I kept eating over here. Well, I got a kick out of watching one yellow jacket. It walked up to this big blob of syrup and ate the whole thing. Then I'm thinking, that blob of syrup is like as big as you are. How are you gonna take off? And he couldn't. That was the funny thing. He's sitting at the edge of the table. He'd go, right onto the ground. And then it would take him like 10 minutes to labor up the leg of the table. And I watch him. He'd go to the edge of the table, right onto the ground. I thought, I never knew a creature like this would take on more food than the ability of his wings to carry it away. I never knew they would do that. So I learned something that day. But I also learned how amazing these guys are at smelling sugar a mile away. How'd they do that? But if you open a can of soda or whatever, a can of Coke, and these guys come around, you know how they do? What if it was this big? Would you go, get out of here? No, you'd drop that can and you'd be gone. But what if it would administer this end to you? I don't know. I don't know how dangerous a yellow jacket would be. But here's the point. We've all been stung by creatures like this. Mosquitoes, wasps, bees, we've all been stung by them, but for the most part, they don't hurt us at all. Why? Because they're small enough, their venom is weak enough, and they inject a small enough amount that it doesn't hurt us. Is that just a random chance that these creatures are the size they are compared to you and me? The last one we want to look at before... Oh, no, I got one more to show you. Now you've killed that mosquito, and now your room is dark again, because now you go to sleep. And during the night, you feel something walking on the bed. You think, oh no, somebody let the cat in. So you turn on the light, and it's not the cat. It's one of these walking up you. Now, I know what you would do. You'd turn on the light, and you'd go, oh, isn't she cute? No, you wouldn't. You'd just die of a heart attack right then and there. Save your venom, buddy. I'm gone. Now, I won't give away anything else about this, but... We have a spider video out there that it took us about 3 years to make based on a seminar I do on spiders, but we wanted to do it right. It's not a scary video. It's designed to show exactly what spiders are really like and how they are your phenomenal allies. There's no spider in the world that's that big. The biggest one is only about half that size. Only about half that size. Anyway, I won't talk any more about spiders, but I do want to show you one other thing. So you know what this guy is, and you know what he eats. Caterpillars eat only leaves, 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 leaves. And one day, they're done. They crawl onto a branch. They strip their skin off, and then they become a chrysalis. Once they come out of the chrysalis, what is it? A caterpillar anymore? No, this is now a butterfly. The butterfly opens up its wings and flies off to eat more leaves, right? No, what is it eating now? Nectar and water. Why doesn't it eat leaves anymore? It's not designed to. As a grub, this is what it's designed to eat, and it eats a whole bunch of them. Once it's in the butterfly stage, it knows by instinct to go to a flower. Why wouldn't it go to a stop sign or an elephant ear? It knows to go to a flower. And by the way, if the caterpillar was this big, you and I would be dead. Not because they would eat us. If caterpillars were all this size, they would defoliate all the trees in the world and then nothing could live. So just think about the balance of nature just because the size of everything fits together perfectly. This guy's going to turn into a butterfly. How big is a butterfly going to be? It's going to be huge. How long will it live? It won't live long at all because it'll go onto a flower to try to get some nectar out of it. It's going to land on the flower and immediately knock it over. Why? Because it's way too big for the flower. It's going to try to unroll this little tube to get nectar. It's going to be way too big for the flower. Folks, everything is sized. The bees and the butterflies are perfectly sized for the flowers, which must have them to pollinate to keep the flowers going. Everything in nature is perfectly sized and shaped compared to everything else. Yes?
So what does the mosquito do? What's its purpose?
I wish I knew. what is a tick's purpose? What was the original purpose of a centipede? You know, I don't know. A gnat. Everything at the beginning, including the serpent. I have a program called The Serpent now. Including the serpent, I sometimes think that the serpent was maybe the most beautiful creature in the garden. What does the devil do? He loves to corrupt the things of God, the things that God made. So the serpent was definitely corrupted. It was made to walk on his belly now. So who knows what the other creatures? And when the Bible says that God said to the serpent, "Cursed are you above all the other livestock," that means everything else is cursed too. And Romans bears that out. So the mosquito is cursed. The tick is cursed. They're all cursed now. That now they do things that bug us, and we kill them because we don't want them around. But they originally must have had quite a good purpose to them. I don't know what it is. So all right, so let's just take a little bit of a safari around the world and have a look at some amazing things that God did. And so when you look at a lion like this, you can tell there's a lion there. But a zebra or an impala will not know that that's a lion unless it gets downwind and can smell it. So creatures hide from each other in this way. A frog buried himself in the sand. All you can see is his eye. Oh, you can't see. I keep using my little thing here to point, and I can't point to a TV screen. Anyway, all you can see is the eye there. He's hiding from his prey and also from being prey. If you walk up the sand a little bit further, you'd say, "Oh, wow, look at these two little pretty beads." If you were to go pick up those beads, you'd discover that those are the eyes of a rattlesnake that's buried himself in the sand. Now, here's my buddy, the chameleon. Here, he is out in the open, but notice how camouflaged he is still. He even has dark patches on him, imitating the branches all around him. When he goes to somewhere else like this, he blends in perfectly. You can see him here on the right. You can barely see him there at all, even though he's right out in the open. This is why a chameleon is so amazing, the camouflage that they have. And while they're sitting there real still, one eye can look up, the other eye can be looking down. They let their eyes do the looking all around, and then their tongue does the zapping. But it's an amazing creature. Well, many creatures hunt by seeing a shadow of a bug moving along a branch. So look what God has done to some creatures to protect them. This is a leaf hopper, and when it lands on a tree or bark or whatever, it can pull itself in and leave no shadow. It's a very flat bug, and so it can leave no shadow at all. Same thing with this caterpillar. This caterpillar's got these like little strings going off of its body to completely obliterate any shadows, so that a predator won't even know there's a caterpillar there as it's moving along the branch. Now, if you look right in the middle of this flower, what do you see? Let me zoom in on it a bit. What do you see in the middle of the flower? There's a little yellow crab spider. See it? Sitting right in the middle. Now, I'm going to stop on this picture for a moment. You and I know immediately what's going to happen here. Why do you know that? Because your mind can think cognitively. Your mind will immediately say, "Oh, that spider is venomous. That spider is carnivorous. That spider is sitting right on top of the nectar. It's waiting for a butterfly or a bee." Your mind will tell you that, right? You know that's what's going to happen. Now here's the kicker. The spider has no idea why it's there. The spider has no idea why she's there. She's there according to her what? Her instinct. This is a crab spider. They have very poor eyesight. She's never seen a butterfly. She's never seen a bee. Furthermore, even if she would, she didn't know what they eat. She doesn't even know that they eat. She knows nothing about a bee or a butterfly. All she knows is her instinct says, either by the color or by the scent or whatever, her instinct tells her, go sit here and wait. If she listens to what God told her to do through instinct, she'll eventually get a meal. See how amazing this stuff is? And it just goes on and on. How about this? Some creatures like the trapdoor spider don't have camouflage on their body, but they hide themselves in a hole like this, camouflage the door, and then put little lines going out from the door so that if a creature comes along and trips on those lines, it'll vibrate in her hole and she can tell that there's a creature walking by. She can open up the door, grab the creature, and it becomes her meal. So when she's sitting in the hole, you can see this grasshopper down here at 4 o'clock walking by. That grasshopper is tripping one of the lines. She's opening the door saying, hi, welcome to supper. By the way, you're it. Now, there's a very cool little video clip on our spider video. You guys all know what a roly-poly is, right? The little ball millipede. You see them under stones. You pick them up and you touch them and they roll up into a little hard ball. I'll show you a picture here in a minute. So a little roly-poly is walking along in the video clip and it trips on the line. Door opens, spider comes out, grabs the roly-poly, down the hole, door closes. Oh, poor little roly-poly, he's all gone. Next thing you know, door opens, out comes the spider, spits the roly-poly out. Roly-poly rolls away, spider goes back, closes the door, roly-poly unwinds and keeps going. They were both following their instinct. The spider felt a vibration, went over, grabbed the roly-poly. The roly-poly thinks, oh, what's going on? So it rolls into its little ball. Spider takes this thing down to the hole. Wow, what is this? I can't eat this thing. I can't get through that shell. Out it goes, and it spits it out. It's the coolest little clip. Anyway, so they're both following their instinct, but, you know, the roly-poly came out on top there. Some creatures do not have any camouflage at all, and they don't need it, because brightly colored creatures in nature like this, when I talk about creatures, I'm talking about mainly bugs. Most kinds of bugs, spiders, insects like this that have bright colors on them also have poisonous body fluids. Now, all spiders are venomous, but they're not all poisonous. Do you know the difference? Venom is always injected. Poison is ingested. So a snake injects venom. A spider injects venom. You eat something poisonous that could kill you. So this spider is poisonous and venomous. It uses its venom to catch its prey. But because it has bright colors on it, its body fluids are poisonous to any creatures that would eat it. But that's the weird thing about it. If a bird comes along and sees that spider, it knows by instinct, don't eat that spider. Why? The bird doesn't know what dying means. The bird has no idea what poison means. Do you follow this? Do you see how amazing instinct is? How this could never be random chance? How does the bird know? The bird doesn't. Same thing with reptiles. They know instinctively, don't eat the brightly colored ones. But they wouldn't know why. This stuff is, you can never get enough of this. This God's creation just seems to go on and on and on. It's amazing. Well, some creatures like frogs also have bright colors. And these guys are very dangerous. If you were to dip your spear tip or your arrow or something into the blood of one of these guys and shoot that into a deer, it will kill the deer. You don't need to worry about the arrow killing it because the poison from the frog's body will literally kill the deer. But some frogs are so dangerous that you would even know to stay away from it. Or how about this butterfly from Europe? You might want to stay away from that guy as well. All right, this guy is a big grasshopper in South Africa. And he would be camouflaged if he was sitting on a dead log, but he's not. So that doesn't work for him here. But When danger approaches, he's got three other tricks up his sleeve. He can make a loud clicking with his back legs. If that doesn't scare you away, he can open up his primary wings, revealing bright red underneath. If that doesn't scare you away, look at that foam that he puts out on both sides of his body. That foam stinks worse than a skunk. So he's got some very cool defenses on him right there. Now, you guys know what a mantis is, and mantis is like walking sticks are typically considered the friendly insects. You could put your hands down, they'll walk on you. You wouldn't want to do that with this mantis. Something has alarmed her, so now her wings are spread out. She's making herself look bigger than she is. Her mouth is wide open, and she's got her head protected by her front legs. While she's in this position, look at her back legs. Thin, scrawny little things, only designed just to help her get around. But look at those front legs. Thick, powerful, even with big thorns on them. These guys can bring down creatures twice their size. That's why they're so good for your gardens. Now, some creatures with thorns on them, like these guys, in the game reserve I worked in, a leopard was found, and it was dying because it had quills in its mouth, and they knew that it had a run-in with a porcupine. So they darted it, brought it into the camp, and while it was still under, they pulled all the quills out to bring it back to health. One of the quills was through the leopard's tongue and 2 inches into the roof of its mouth. That shows you how hard a porcupine can ram. So you don't mess with these guys. You got those long spikes on them. Some creatures like scaly anteaters and armadillos have the armor on the outside to protect them. And there's the little roly-poly. He's quite well protected from creatures that live under the stones with that hard shell that he has. Let's go into the water for a little bit. Look at this big poisonous jellyfish. But if you look right in the middle of it, and I can't point to it, but right down the middle, you see an invisible shrimp. You can see about 2/3 of the way up, you can see 2 eyes, and the little blue right here, this is the tail end right here. And everything in between is invisible. How did all of the parts of his body, even its exoskeleton, how did all of that get invisible? And if it eats food, you can watch food going right down through its body. Astonishing. Well, here's a little fish that is taking some refuge among the seaweed. But look at the seaweed. Is he actually taking refuge among the seaweed? No, this is a seahorse. It's called a sea dragon. And the top end of this even has fake young growth to make it look like the plant is growing. And all the stuff that looks like seaweed is part of the seahorse. None of it is seaweed. It's all part of the it's all part of the seahorse. And it even fools the fish. Now let's have a look at a guy that's attached himself to a coral reef. You might say, wow, that shellfish is quite camouflaged there. Well, you might think it's camouflaged, but not to the creatures that eat it. When creatures that eat it come by, watch what he can do. Now you see him, now you don't. How in the world does he do that? How does he know exactly what to do to virtually become invisible? Little knobs that it puts out that perfectly match all the surroundings around it. Astonishing. Well, let's come back out and have a look at a little spider. This is another species of crab spider sitting on a leaf. This spider would be very edible for a bird or a reptile or any other creature that eats it because it doesn't have poison in its body. But this spider will spin a little bit of web on a leaf, and then when it spins that web, it'll sit right in the middle of it. When it does that, it looks like a bird dropping. How many creatures do you know that go and eat bird droppings off of leaves? They know. They normally don't do that. So here is this creature that looks like a bird dropping. But understand something. The spider has no idea what a bird is. It's never seen one. It does not know anything about a bird's digestive cycle. It doesn't know that if it spins web on a leaf and sits right down on it, that it will look like something that nobody wants to eat. How would it know that? Again, instinct is perfect. Every creature has its own astonishing instinct. Now along comes a butterfly and lands down at the top here to get some nectar off of this flower, but instantly gets caught and eaten. Why? Because that's not a flower. That whole thing is a mantis. All of the parts of that look like leaves or petals of a flower, those are all the legs of the praying mantis. So it's amazing. This mantis looked just like a flower. Now you might know you might have heard of a longhorn grasshopper. You can see its head on the left side. Its wing looks like a leaf. But look how well that leaf the creature's wing is imitating a real leaf. Look at the extreme edges of it, at the top of it. See those little curved areas? That looks exactly like where a caterpillar has chewed. And look in the middle of it, all that fungus growing there. That's not fungus, and no caterpillar has ever chewed there. This is the creature's wing. It's just imitating a leaf that has those features to it. If you think that's weird, look at this one. This one looks like the creature's dying. It's not. It's just imitating a leaf that's drying up, even with the point of the yellow between the brown and the green. Every time you see a leaf drying up like that, where there's still green chlorophyll, wherever you see the border between the dried up part and where there's still green, there's always a patch of yellow. How does that creature even get the yellow there? It's astonishing. Well, this is a stick insect. It's a little easier to see here. This one's easy to see, but how about this one? This one's kind of tough to see. But that's because this one is imitating all the grass around it so that it perfectly blends in and you hardly even see that there's a stick insect there. It just looks exactly like the blades of grass all around it. Now, this is a caterpillar that has just hatched out on this acacia tree in southern Africa. Now, notice something about that caterpillar. It looks exactly like the leaves around it. But who laid the egg that the caterpillar hatched from? A moth. The moth knows by instinct to go to this acacia tree. Why? She could go to a banana tree or a maple tree, but she doesn't. She doesn't know why. If she did, though, her babies would not look like those trees at all. Her babies would not look like those leaves at all. And as they hatch out and crawl around, they'd be easily spotted by the creatures that would eat them. So by instinct, she goes to this tree. She has no idea why, because the moment she lays those eggs, she flies away somewhere and dies. She doesn't even know what they're going to turn into. But by instinct, she goes to this tree. And she can't know how incredible that is, that her babies are going to look just like the tree when they hatch. Now, if you look at that leaf on the upper left corner, you would say, wow, that looks just like a leaf. But it's not. It's a moth sitting on the forest floor. It even has a brown strip running from one end to the other, making it look like the vein of a leaf. Isn't that amazing? If you think that's weird, look at this moth right there. That's another moth sitting on the forest floor. Looks exactly like a dried up brown leaf, but it's not. It's another moth sitting there. Now, one of my favorite moth pictures is this one because it's hard to see the moth. Right there is the moth. I'll highlight it. But notice how amazing that is. That moth did not look in a mirror at the beginning of the day and say, huh, I wonder which way the stripes run on my wings. She doesn't know there's stripes there. She doesn't even care that there's stripes there. But apparently when she lands on the tree, apparently she knows how to orient herself. She doesn't know why or how, but when she does it this way, the wings line up, the stripes on her wings line up perfectly with the bark on the tree. Now, I'm going to bring the program to a close in a few minutes, but I want to show you some of my funny animals. These are my caterpillars that I've trained to stand on their heads. No, let me show you some funny animals. Okay, so here is a butterfly, and a bird swoops down from the left and grabs it by the head there, and gets a mouthful of powder instead. Why? Because that's not the head. Here's the head. How did it get all that at the back there that looks just like another insect at the back of it? Let's go over to Southeast Asia and look at the lantern bug. Here's its eye, and here's its antenna. It's headed that way. Wrong. Here's its head. It's heading that way. They call it the wrong way beetle. I wonder why. This is the rare pillow-imitating couch dog. And when we tell Holly it's time for her bath, she tries to jump up onto the couch to look like a pillow. It doesn't work. We see her, and she gets her bath. Let's look at the European nightjar. This is like a whippoorwill that we would have here. Notice her head right here. There's her beak. Here's her eye. Why is her eye closed, or rather, why is she squinting? One of the theories behind it is that hawks and eagles, as they're flying overhead, have such incredible eyesight that if the bird's eye stayed open, it's a perfect black circle. And they can spot that perfect black circle from up there, and they can know by instinct that that could be prey. So when danger comes, they squint so that you can't see them. Now, certain owls will do this. In the game reserve I worked in, years later, my wife and I, when we were missionaries in South Africa ourselves, we went back to Kruger Park, and we went to this one area where you can get off the road and go back to a water hole, and the ranger that was there came up to us quietly and said, "Do you guys like birds?" We said, "Oh, we love birds." He says, "Come here, come here, come here, look at this." He took us over to a tree, and there at about the height of my shoulders was a tree with a branch that went straight out. Nestled up right against the tree, sitting on the branch, but right up against the tree, was the cutest little Scops owl you've ever seen, about 5 inches tall, fully grown, tiny Scops owl, and its feathers looked just like the bark. But it was doing the same thing with its eyes, squinting. So we walked up, not close to it, didn't want to scare it, but it sat there just like this. Here's the branch it's sitting on, here's the tree behind it. We're over here. As we walked around it, it went like this. It followed us around, but with its eyes closed, with its eyes squinting, because its instinct tells it, keep your eyes squinted, that way you can't be seen. It was so cute to watch this owl doing that. Anyway, what you don't see is that there are 4 babies right there automatically doing the same thing right in front of the mother. As soon as danger approaches, they know instinctively, squint, close your eyes. They don't know why. Now, one of my favorite birds is the ptarmigan. In this series, because of the kind of the magical color changes, look how it looks like the leaves that fell the autumn before, and so while it's walking around, it just blends right in. But when winter comes, it's not going to be blending in anymore because there's going to be snow. But that's okay because God has designed her to change white, and so when her feathers are completely changed, you almost don't even see her anymore. So now she blends in again. So you can see a whole flock of them sitting there, and all you can see is their beak and their little eye. And they're so perfectly camouflaged. Now, what do you see here besides the elephant? Do you see anything here? It's right in front of you. It's right at the front. Right here is a rabbit. Here's his front paws. Here's its nose. Here's its eye, the top of his head, its ear. Here's its back. You see it now? It's sleeping. Let me wake it up. Boo! Now do you see the rabbit? But so could a hawk or eagle. Because now look at that eye. It doesn't match the sticks around it. So now a hawk or an eagle flying over could spot that eye and say, aha, there might be prey down there, and land there and maybe make a big screech or whatever and get the rabbit to run. And then then the hawk or an eagle might have a good catch. So let's put that rabbit back to sleep. Go to sleep, little bunny. Now you can hardly see it again. Now, I have to show you something as we close. This is called Batesian mimicry. This is when a creature looks like another creature that's dangerous. Let me show you what I mean. And then that way it protects itself. You know what that thing is, right? It's a wasp. If you grab hold of it, it will sting you and you won't grab hold of another one again. That's the theory behind it as well. So the idea behind this is if a bird says, oh, there's a wasp, I'll go get it, or just sees an insect. If a bird grabs it and gets stung, the bird will think, ow, that thing hurts, I won't ever go after one of those again. But look at some other bugs that look like a wasp, like this perfectly harmless beetle. It has no stinger, no capabilities of hurting anything, but it looks like it could sting, so many creatures will avoid it. Same thing with this perfectly harmless moth. This moth even has wings like a hornet. Most moths have big wings that stick out the side. This moth has the colors of a hornet, even the narrow wings of a hornet. Looks just like a hornet sitting there, yet it's a completely harmless moth. Same thing with this mantis. It's not harmless because it itself is a hunter, but it looks like it could sting. That's what I'm talking about with Batesian mimicry. You look like something else that's dangerous. Or like this guy. This guy, you know, most creatures do not like eating ants because they're very bitter tasting. But they could eat that ant. Why? Count the legs. What is it? Do you know what it is? It's a spider, right? Well, wait a minute. Spiders only have 2 body parts. Am I not seeing a head, a thorax, and an abdomen? No. God has cleverly put a constriction there in the cephalothorax of this spider, making it look like 2 body parts. And this ant will take its front pair of legs and move them around like this, like the ant moves its antenna. But the spider has never seen the ant. So how does it know to do that? We actually even have a clip of one of them doing that in that spider video. It's amazing. This guy even has the same odor and scent so he can walk among the other ants like this, and they don't even know there's danger there. Well, when you climb trees in Africa, you have to be careful because you could put your hand on a snake that's sunning himself. But you put your hand on this snake, you wouldn't have to worry about it because that's not a snake, it's a caterpillar. That's the head of the caterpillar. And when it senses danger, it can blow up the front of its body like this and revealing fake eyes, fake upper and lower scales, fake heat sensors, just like those of a viper. And I used to have vipers in Africa. That looks just like the head of a viper, like a rattlesnake or one of those kinds of snakes. So, it's just a harmless caterpillar. And lastly, I have to show you this weird bug. In Pennsylvania, and I'm sure you do too, in August especially, you hear the cicadas clicking in the trees, right? Well, this is a big one from South America, and this one has, its head is actually right here. This thing at the end of its head is like a big hollow eggshell that's called a casque. Look at another picture. There's the casque at the top, and this one, something alarmed it, so it lifts up its primary wings, revealing big fake eyes that it doesn't even know it has. It just knows by instinct to raise up its wings when danger comes. But now, on the last picture, look at the side of the casque. Isn't that wild? What'd that look like? A lizard? A crocodile? A dinosaur? Fake eye? Scales? Even teeth? Folks, if you've caught one of these things and painted that stuff on, it's not going to come through on their babies. This stuff is absolutely amazing, what you can find in nature. Well, what I want to do is just wrap it up and say, remember Romans 1:20 that ends with saying, we do not have any excuse if we can't see design. Remember the three lessons. Every single creature has its own story to tell. Everyone has its own story to tell. Every single creature has its own amazing instinct that it has. And every single creature is perfectly sized and shaped and colored and whatever for its environment to live in. And this is barely scratching the surface of God's phenomenal world. Thank you so much, folks. Tomorrow we'll go into a different realm. We'll start off with a look at the flood, and we'll show you a video of an animation that you've probably never seen before. We'll have a look at some interesting things you might have not even thought of before with the global flood. And the second program we'll do is the importance of the Genesis record, and we'll look at some basic reasons as to why we know that a creation day was in fact a day and not millions or billions or even thousands of years or whatever it was. And in the evening, we'll look at dinosaurs. It's a big, big topic, but there's absolutely some amazing things with dinosaurs. Our brand new video on dinosaurs includes some things that I was just given permission to use right before I finished editing the video. And it's astonishing stuff that you wouldn't even think. There have been now dinosaur bones found, and they shave them with electron microscopes. They can see that they shave them to about 1/30th the width of a human hair. And in every single bone they're finding, in every single one that still has original bone, they can see the original blood vessels, and they're all clotted. There's stuff that's black in every single one of them. And that only happens when the creature asphyxiates by drowning. Park on that one for a minute. And then we'll close by a look at the program called Lost Secrets of the Ancient Civilizations. This kind of wraps everything up. So thank you for coming tonight. Have a good night. And Pastor, I don't know if you need to say anything. So good night, and we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9:30. Thank you.